I'm joined now by Jack Brendlinger here in the R2 Gallery of the Launchpad, the other show that will be here through October 5th, and it is a retrospective. How are you today, Jack?
Well, I'm just absolutely amazed at the great job that the Launchpad has done setting this show up. I walked in and said, my goodness, who did all this work? Come over here. I had no idea that I enjoyed sculpture. And I took a class in high school. I had finished my credits. And I took a class of ceramics. And the teacher just poured plates, painted them, and fired them. And that was very boring to me. So I asked her if I could take the clay and do anything I wanted. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, go ahead. So I did this pair of hands. And we fired them, and we entered them into a contest, and it won a national award.
Wow.
So that keyed me that I probably had some interest in sculpture. Before that, I just had drawn and painted and fooled around with art.
Uh-huh. You know?
And then I sort of laid off of it for a number of years and painted and fooled around with that way and drew. But I was down in Mexico. And my family was, it was in 1967, and I was with my family. I had two boys, 3 and 5, and we were spending 2 months down in Mexico just traveling around in the off season.
Sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it was a great time. And we went to the museum in Mexico City, and they had all these sculptures of these heavy ladies with big hands and big feet. And I just thought, oh, they're wonderful. So I went and bought some clay, and we went down on the beach, Puerto Vallarta, and I sculpted that.
Wow, on the beach.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And it's a, as you can see, it's a Hispanic lady and her child, mm-hmm. and they're both asleep. And it's been one of my best sellers. You know, it's... I don't try to sell much of the work. I had a bad experience with a gallery at one time, and so I haven't done much gallery work, and I just try to sell the stuff on my own. Mm-hmm. And since it's a hobby, I don't really worry about it much.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I think I've sold 2 to 3 pieces out of this show. So.
Wow, congratulations.
And, I'm excited about that.
Are any of the pieces in the show on loan?
No.
No, okay.
No, as a matter of fact, I should have probably done that, but as you can see, there's not really enough room to
right.
do much of anything else.
No shortage of sculptures. And it's great the sort of sections that there are displaying a lot of different styles. I personally really like this wall with a lot of geometrical humans simplified down to some really basic shapes.
It's one of the few, those three right there are one of the few things that I worked in clay.
Uh-huh.
I normally work in a wax format that you can melt down and it works like clay anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But those pieces were, I was taking another ceramic class in Aspen, and I started doing this, and rolling out the clay and making these pieces. And so, I enjoy that. Those are probably three of my favorite things.
Uh-huh.
You know, I like the simplicity of them, and I consider myself a impressionistic artist anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to make everything perfectly, you know. So those are my impressions of what I would have liked to have done if I'd have been this full time.
Mm-hmm.
I would have probably stuck with that sort of level.
The bull as well is definitely a highlight.
Yes, the bull is impressionistic as to a rushing bull, and I like the squareness that I did with the legs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ask me why I did it that way, I can't tell you.
Reminds me of Picasso.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of, you know, checks and squares and impressions that he did with his work, you know. especially in his earlier work.
So you did bring your tools as well as a sculpture in progress
here
as well.
I brought a piece over here that was sort of to show the people how it works. I've liked using granite pieces and stuff like that and getting my sculptures to work into them and stuff. And tried to make the bases somewhat interesting, etc. But this work in progress over here is you can see, it, this is a sculptor's wax. Mm-hmm. And if you soften it up a little bit, it's like a piece of clay. Mm-hmm. But if you let it, you heat it up to work this way, but then if you let it cool down, it's just like a candle.
Uh-huh.
It gets hard and stays where it's supposed to be.
Wow!
And so you don't have to do any. I left that off so people could see that was there.
Broke
off. So, and we use I use a blowtorch, and heated tools that are used for radio work and stuff like that, and then all these metal tools,
mm-hmm,
that you can see that I use because they have their certain purposes.
Almost like dental tools.
Yes, they are. Some of them are dental tools,
And you have this great effect, which really turns out cool once it's fired, of this splashing.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to draw attention to that. I've never seen that in bronze.
Well, it's my discovery.
Uh-huh.
And even my foundry doesn't know how I do it.
Trade secret.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. I won't make you expose your secret.
Well, if you won't tell your audience.
No guarantees. So you've done a few faces, and one thing I read about of this particular show is the interesting way that time has changed and your sculptures. I mean, they're aging, they're changing colors. Could you talk about that aspect?
Well, when I first started getting back into sculpture into the mid-70s, I was making movies, and we were making an American Indian movie. And these were actual people that we had dressed up as Indians to play the parts in the movie. And I fell in love with this guy. And I call him Yellowbird because that's his Indian name. But his English name was John Taylor. And he came down to Bear Butte in South Dakota, which is a sacred ground of the American Indian. And he had never been there before. And he was dying of some sort of cancer. And he was just phenomenal. He couldn't speak English. And had rarely been off of the reservation. And I took some pictures of him, and I came home and sculpted him immediately because I just thought he was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a guy we did in another place in Idaho. But we traveled all over the country chasing sacred grounds of the American Indian. And so a lot of this Indian stuff came out of that era. The pugilist over here is something I also did in high school, but it was much more, plain than this. And then a few years ago, I thought, well, I'm going to redo that. So I redid it, and it's actually, I used pictures of Gale Sayers. Do you remember who he was? He was a football player, phenomenal football player. And then I put the sweat on him
really
with
cool.
Just acrylic.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Just a dripped acrylic on there, and it looks just like sweat.
Oh,
so.
It created a great effect.
Yeah.
I've never seen a statue sweat like that.
And, most of the things I've done, that was Bear Butte over there, that other Indian.
Uh-huh.
But most of the things, I just had a whim and said, I think I'll go try to do that. And I had a hero in a sculptor called Giacometti. And he did very simple figures and very skinny figures. And I started that with the idea of the way he did. And he had a walking man. And that walking man, about a year ago, sold for $100 million. Mine doesn't quite up to that level. But that's what I call my walking man. Or Strutton, I call him.
Yeah.
And so I just have a whim. The dancing lady over here was in the Giacometti style, the bumpiness. Mm-hmm. The basketball player is in his style stuff.
What is the gold?
All that bronze? Is bronze polished.
Yeah, polished bronze.
That's all it is. Wow. It's polished up. And I used to do a lot of these guys. That are doing sports, and I used to polish them, but then they look too much like a award.
Okay.
You know. Uh-huh. So I stopped doing that, but I like action sports. I like stopping the action.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that he's in the middle of this wave, and that sort of thing. And here's another one with that secret style that I've got.
Uh-huh. The foam.
Yeah.
Or snow in some cases.
Yeah.
And this is probably the most abstract.
I did that years ago, and I sculpted it by cutting out wax, making wax flat in a pan, uh-huh. and then cutting it out and assembling it. And I call it flight because I'm trying to make sort of a bird feel.
Okay.
And this was probably done in about 1980. And it was very difficult to cast. And so we decided that if we ever did it again, we would just take the metal and cut it to this and then, put it together rather than make it in wax and then try to make bronze out of that.
Where do you
but
go?
It was kind of interesting. Bronze shrinks when it cools down. And so this piece here was supposed to go from here to here, but it was way too short. It shrunk. And so we just said, we just have to make it like we do. So we redesigned it and put it that way instead of, making this. It would have been a better piece, I think, if added this there.
One more piece.
But we tried to add some pieces on the end of it, and it didn't look right, so mm-hmm. we just decided to do it this way. And this was cast in Denver. I used to do a lot of casting in Denver, but now I do all my casting over in Paonia.
Oh, yeah, the foundry there.
Yeah, and the man's famous.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's in the Metallurgy Hall of Fame. It's named Zimmerman, and they don't come any better as far as casting is concerned.
Wow.
I would wish that they did a little bit better patinas.
Uh-huh.
And patina being the color you put on the sculpture, and it actually eats into the sculpture. It's an acid, and it eats in and makes the color. So like this blue here is uric acid.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing would happen if you urinated on it. For a number of years, it would turn that color.
Wow.
Yeah, so, but that happens quickly, and this is, again, uric acid here. You can't get white in patina, so this is paint.
Oh, okay.
So,
cool.
Yeah.
Beautiful effect on the water with the uric acid.
Yeah, this is one of my more famous, one of my more favorite pieces,
mm-hmm.
As far as I've done a lot of surfers and sold a lot of them. This one especially has been very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I change the wave every time. So they're never the same. If you look at it, it's the same surfer here as over here.
Okay.
And lots of sculptors used to do that. Remington used to use the same horse, and he would just move him all over the place to make 10 horses.
Uh-huh.
He'd heat up the legs a little bit and move them a little bit, but that was it. It was the same horse.
Interesting.
So they did that quite often, and so that's what I did here. It's the same surfer, but a different wave.
And so how do you create the cast so that the wax doesn't melt? What is that part?
Well, it is called the Lost Wax Method.
Oh.
And it was created 4,000 years before Christ. And that's how they made armor and weapons. And what they did was heat up a fire, and create this same system. Now, the system is complicated. But let's take the head over here. I take this head to them in a wax. And they make a mold on each half, right,
uh-huh.
of that. By painting a rubber on it, and then covering that rubber with a plaster. And then it'll come apart like this. So then they come apart like this, they throw this away, and they put the back in there, but he's gone. And they pour wax in that hole, in that form, with that rubber in there, and they pour it, and they wait a few minutes, and they pour it out. And then they cool the wax down a little bit, and they pour hot wax in there again, and they build up an inside here. They build it up to about a quarter of an inch thick. Right. Then they take that quarter of an inch piece of thing, and they take the mold off of it, and see if you can feel it's hollow here. Mm-hmm. And it's about a quarter of an inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This has to be hollow because when bronze shrinks, when it cools down, it shrinks. And it has a tendency to break all up if it's too thick.
Mm-hmm.
So everything of this size has to be hollow.
Wow.
And these are all hollow, you know, because if you tried to make that big situation, it would, again, shrink. So then they've got this piece in a wax. And it's right down to every little hair will show. And they take that and they dip the whole thing in a ceramic material. And they do that until they build up about a half an inch all the way around, outside and inside. And then they have a way to pour the metal in. They put a cone up here and they pour the metal in there and it flows all inside that ceramic. And then they break the ceramic off and this is what they get.
Wow.
And then there's usually a line right down the middle where, you know, and they have to chase that with tools to grind them off and make it look like what the sculptor did.
Wow.
So when you look at elk that are in front of the elk lodge down there in Glenwood, is a big, huge, full-sized elk. Well, the biggest part of that elk that they can cast is 18 inches. So then you have to take all those pieces and weld them together like the artist wanted.
Wow.
And then chase all those welds.
Wow.
Right. So it's a lot of work, a lot of manpower.
Yeah.
And that's why they're expensive. As well as the copper has gone up in price heavily. So they're expensive. But that's why, you know, compared to other art, they're pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just a lot of work goes into them. The foundry has, you know, four or five people. That's all they do is grind away on the sculptures that they do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, thank you so much for taking us around the gallery.
Well, I'm glad that we had a chance to meet, and it's fun. And I wish everybody would come and see the show. It's up till October 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten some great response. I think I've sold some pieces. So I'm excited.